Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Fast Talk.
Street Talk.
Mike Graham.
Fighting the good fight with all his might. Providing a welcome dose of common sense for the common people.
Solid Talk.
Hot Talk.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham.
On the app, on your mobile, Talk Radio and Talk TV.
Good morning and welcome to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk TV. It is hellish out there, ladies and gentlemen. I'm told that up and down the country there's torrential rain, there's flooding, there's railways that aren't working properly due to the rain, there's car traffic jams all over the place. It's very difficult to get around. I think a lot of people have come to the conclusion that it's a bit expensive to work from home and let's all come back to work. And so nobody can actually get to work because there's more people than there are trains. There's more people than there are spaces on the road. And here we all are back at work. And yet again, the system doesn't seem to be able to cope. Coming up this morning, we've got plenty to talk about. The Scottish independence vote has just been told that you can't have one, basically. There is no referendum. The Supreme Court, literally minutes ago, has just ruled that Scotland cannot have a second referendum on independence. We'll find out from the SNP, I'm sure, what they think of all that. We've got Kate Hoey here with us, of course, from the House of Lords, to give us her view on what that actually will mean for the union, what it will mean for Prime Minister's questions, which comes up later on today, which is Sunak, of course, versus Sir Keir Starmer. No doubt Ian Blackford will have something to say about being held to a ransom by Westminster and all of that. We'll talk about the latest from the Qatar World Cup. We'll talk about how Piers Morgan, in an interview on Talk TV, has not only managed to get Ronaldo freed from Manchester United, but has caused the leaders of Manchester United, the owners of Manchester United, to say, do you know what? We're going to sell it. Piers Morgan will from now on be even more insufferable, because what he will say is that he got Manchester United sold. Heaven forbid Ronaldo ends up at Arsenal. That'll be the end of it for all of us. 0344 499 1000. Coming up, we'll be having a go at the BBC, who decided at half-time yesterday during the French game to talk about climate change, not football. Unbelievably. Also, we'll be finding out what's going on within the Tory party. William Clouston is here from the SDP as well. 0344 499 1000. What is going on exactly with the egg crisis? Is there really one? Do you really need more than 12 eggs every time you go to the shop? Can you cope? I'm sure you can. This is the Independent Republic of Mike Graham. This is Talk TV. Let's do it. Well, as ever, there's an awful lot going on. It's Wednesday. Prime Minister's questions coming up at midday, of course, today. We've got the migrants to talk about as well, because Manston, the immigration centre, seems to be now lying empty. We'll be hearing from Andy McNab about what's going on in Ukraine too. But let's say a very good morning to Baroness Hurry. Kate, it's very nice to see you.
Good morning, Mike.
You're lovely. Looking quite festive. It's sort of, the other day I was saying it feels a bit wintry. Now it just feels kind of bleh. Yucky.
It's a miserable day.
It's horrible,
there.
Isn't
miserable
it?
And the roads are crowded.
Roads are crammed. I'm told that everyone I'm seeing coming in this morning has got a face like thunder because the tubes are all overcrowded. And it does, I mean, there is a sense, and I don't wish to be the bearer of all things bad news-wise, but there's a sense that the systems in this country are all kind of creaking at the seams. Some of them barely working, some of them not working at all.
Absolutely. And you sort of, in the morning especially, the worst thing can happen is when it's raining and people are going to work. But then when you discover that actually the tube's packed again, which hasn't been. And I think there's a general, it's that November, isn't it? That awful month where everything's getting darker every night. We still haven't got to the end of that. And people are just feeling generally depressed. And then more and more strikes coming. And
we'll get onto the strikes in a moment.
But that's why I think more and more people are probably listening to you, Mike, to cheer them up in the morning.
Well, this is what we try to do. So we'll try and bring you some mirth and some good cheer at various points throughout. But let's kick off with the decision we've just heard from the Supreme Court. Quite an important one, I guess. The SNP and the Scottish Government wanting to have an opportunity to have another referendum without the go-ahead from Rishi Sunak. They've been told they can't do that, effectively.
Yeah. Well, this is really all about how much power devolution gives particular parts of the country. In Scotland has wanted more and more power, and the Scottish First Minister thinks that she had the right to decide whether there was going to be another referendum. Remember the last referendum, 2013, I think it was.
Yeah, 14.
They it was meant to be the once in a lifetime generation, and that decision was taken. She then, the SNP, Scottish National Party, had been pushing for another one,
and it was 54-46, wasn't it?
That's right, something like it was quite a reasonable amount.
Yeah, I mean, it was bigger than the European referendum.
It was, and she then over the last year or two has been pushing for another one. The United Kingdom government quite rightly said no.
Yeah.
And so she went ahead with saying, well, we'll just call our own and we're going to have one next October. But legally, the Scottish legal system said it would have to come to the Supreme Court.
Yes.
And the Supreme Court, after a lot of time and effort and money and pages of documents, come out and said no.
I mean, effectively, it's a constitutional question in the end.
It is a constitutional question.
And devolution, I'm not sure. You were probably more familiar with how that was set up than I was, obviously with Northern Ireland's Assembly and the Welsh Assembly, which is now the Senedd. All of those powers that were given to people at that time, I'm pretty sure didn't include a sort of unilateral method of separating from the Union.
No, and the Scottish Parliament has more power really already than the rest of the other devolved nations. But, you know, it raises the question of, you know, if Scotland is wanting to leave and break up the United Kingdom, should we all have a vote in that?
Yeah. Well, a lot of people think we should, and of course a lot of people think Scotland's best chance of independence is to ask the English.
Oh, I know.
Because
well,
a lot
especially
of people,
if you live up in the North
East. There's a lot of people in England go, yeah, let's get rid of them. I mean, I'm very passionately pro-Union. I do not wish to see the country broken up. You know, my parents are both from Scotland. I say this all the time. I was born in London, but I feel myself very British.
Yeah.
But not so much English. I feel Scottish and British.
Well, I think that's what makes the United Kingdom so special.
Yeah.
You know, if we lost Scotland, if we lost Northern Ireland, you know, we haven't got that feeling of sort of anybody can be anything.
Right.
And then you're still, the thing that binds us all together is that we're British. They're part of the United Kingdom.
Yes.
So I think, I mean, they will go mad today, the Scottish National Party, I expect Ian Blackford is already winding himself up.
He'll have plenty to say. But of course, in some ways, this is partly playing into their hands, because I always used to say, when Alex Salmond was in Scotland, when I was working up there, he loved the idea of complaining about Westminster not giving him anything, because it kind of fed the beast, if you like, of Scottish nationalism, where he knew that they wouldn't give it to him. He knew there was no way to get it, but he complained that they didn't give it to him and it was an anti-Scottish thing. And that worked for him.
Yes, and they have always have this sort of grievance thing.
Yeah.
Everything that goes wrong is Westminster's
fault.
When anything good happens, it's because they've got devolution and it's the Scottish Nationalist Party. But, you know, they will continue to do that. And we are going to see... but I think that, you know, our government now has got the Supreme Court ruling and they've got to stick to that. Mm. And they've not got to think that by sort of giving a little bit more, somehow people will not vote for the Scottish Nationalist Party. The more you give a party like the Scottish Nationalist Party, the more they will want.
Mm-hmm. And has Nicola Sturgeon not already said, though, if this was to be the decision, that she would then take the view that the next election would be a referendum on independence, which again is a bit of sort of being slightly too clever for your own good, isn't it?
Yes, well, it still wouldn't give them independence, even if she did win a biggish majority.
No.
But, I mean, they've always made independence pretty much a big part of their election manifesto anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, the problem is both the Conservatives and Labour haven't really been able in Scotland to fight back against, you know, they haven't, they haven't until fairly recently really started to sing the praises of what the Union means.
Yes.
Let ordinary Scottish people realise just how much they would miss if there wasn't a Westminster government pouring money in.
Well, and just the general mix of the way that Scotland's economy is constructed. I think there was a figure that came out the other day that one in five people in Scotland is in receipt of benefits, and therefore, you know, something like two or three in five working for the public sector, much of which is provided by British government.
Well, you see, I'm worried generally, and I mean, I see Labour's just pushing more and more devolution. Starmer's come out with this idea that we have mayors in all sorts of different places. I think the United Kingdom is small enough to have, you know, strong local government and a strong national government. Mm. It's so hugely expensive.
I don't think you need an extra layer, do you?
And we need a national health service, which is for the whole of the United Kingdom, not bits of it being different. And I've always been an integrationist, but, you know, of course that ship has moved and I'm not sure we're going to be able to go back.
I mean, coming to the NHS, where they're talking about maybe the way forward is to have regional targets instead of national targets. Well, how about you don't have any targets and you actually just do what it says on the tin? I mean, I have not had so many text messages for a long time from the NHS. I keep getting about three a day for me to go and get my latest COVID booster.
Yeah.
Now, if they spent more time looking after people who were actually sick, instead of trying to corral people who are not sick, Maybe that would be a good idea.
Well, I think that was what was disappointing. Another many disappointments of the budget, the mini budget, was that once again money was just being poured in to the National Health Service without actually making any evaluation of what changes need to happen to make it more efficient. And there's no doubt about it. You talk to anyone who's privately works within the National Health Service, they will privately tell you what they think's wrong.
Yes.
And it's certainly not just about money.
And you wonder why politicians can't just go and ask those people those questions and discover what's wrong and then just fix it instead of Rishi Sunak uttering these kind of meaningless phrases like, I will always stand by the NHS.
Well, that's
great. You know, it's like old Bill Clinton, I would say, make poverty history. Well, who's going to disagree with it? But you're not going to actually do anything.
No,
but just to go back to Scotland for a moment, more people voted to leave the European Union in Scotland than voted for independence. And so they have to be a bit careful about even having a referendum, because I'm not sure that the SNP would win the second one.
Well, the irony is that they're saying, of course, that if they did win, they would immediately want to rejoin the EU. And of course, they couldn't do that without, first of all, giving up the pound and taking the euro, which a lot of people in Scotland wouldn't want. You then have the issue of the border between Scotland and England and all of that. And I think, you know, for the idea that Scotland wants to be independent and yet they want to then start and give up so much of their powers to the European Union and the Commission, which is not elected. So I think you know, for a lot of people, it's sort of a romanticised idea of independence. Mm. Come the actual ballot, where there would be a real opportunity to get that, I'm just not sure people will be so enthusiastic.
Quite. And talking of Brexit, of course, I mean, Northern Ireland's still, you know, sort of stuck in the throat, if you like, of the realisation that it hasn't changed yet. It's still in a halfway house situation.
Yeah, we're still way out of, we're still part of EU rules and trading and so on.
Right.
But we're in the Supreme Court next week.
Right.
Next, I'm going to go along and watch the case where we're taking the government to court.
Is this the case that started in Northern Ireland?
Yes, it is, and it got through, and now it'll be 2 days where we're basically saying the protocol has broken the Act of Union.
Mm.
And the court in Northern Ireland said, yes, it has subjugated, they used the word, but Parliament impliedly agreed to it.
Mm.
That's the wording they used.
Okay.
So in other words, all those MPs who voted for the withdrawal agreement knew that they were breaking the union.
Right, okay.
So,
And so that means that you would win in that case, hopefully.
Well, if we would love to win, but you know, five judges, they'll spend probably another couple of months writing and looking at it, and we'll get a judgment a bit like this in a couple of months' time.
And what have you made of the stories over the weekend about this kind of, you know, let's be more like Switzerland and let's kind of have some kind of, you know, Jeremy Hunt inspired closer union without being in the EU?
Well, I was pleased that Rishi Sunak, if we can believe any of our politicians these days, came out immediately and said, you know, he would not tolerate anything that was going to...
That worried me immediately.
Aligned it, yes.
It was a bit like, you know, we've got total confidence in the manager.
Exactly, and the next day he goes. But I think they would face a huge backlash, not just in Parliament, but it would completely... I mean, I think they've got very little chance of holding on to the red wall seats, but they certainly wouldn't if they do that. And we'd end up paying money again into the European Union, having to follow all their rules. It really, even the Swiss type model, and Switzerland is much smaller and it's a very, very different situation.
Mm.
We would end up basically being back fully in the single market.
Right.
Then we're really in the European Union again. And the problem, you know, people voted for it wasn't just about economic situation. It was about the idea that we could really run ourselves, be independent.
Right.
It's not people who voted for Brexit, it's not their fault that the government has mishandled it and hasn't taken the advantages that we could do. And we're still hopeful that that will happen. But, you know, I can understand why a few people are moaning, because they don't quite see, you know, the confusion between what's been the pandemic and what's been the Ukraine war and what's been Brexit. And, of course, the media on the whole and all the people who...
Remainiacs love it, because they're all saying, Brexit's
fault.
You it wouldn't work. Told you it's not working. It's now, we can now say it's a disaster and let's change it and move all the way back to where it was. But let's take a little break for a moment. Kate Hoey is here. We've got to talk about the World Cup. We've got to talk about sport in general, Manchester United, Ronaldo, all of that, plus the RMT strikes. I'm telling you that these people who run the RMT have got no interest in anything other than disrupting this country, stopping you from going about your lawful daily business, and frankly, ruining Christmas. It's a disgrace. Mick Grinch, you should be ashamed of yourself. This is Talk TV.
Let's broaden our minds.
Talk Radio.
Online, on DAB+, Talk Radio and Talk TV.
Welcome back to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk TV. Another big day down here in the centre of London. We've got Prime Minister's questions coming up at midday. Sir Keir Starmer, of course, has been doing all manner of things this week, speaking to the CBI about how we shouldn't be so reliant on immigrants. We'll talk about that a little bit later on. Kate Hoey is here with us. Kate, let's just talk about the World Cup before we move on. You, in your previous incarnation, were a Minister of Sport at one point. What have you made of all of this kind of, you know, chest beating and hand wringing and all sorts of, you know, emotional aspects of whether we should be promoting LGBT or allowing Qatar to do what they want? What do you think of it all?
Well, I don't take, you know, the view that sport and politics can never mix, because that's really rather ridiculous.
Yes.
When you look at all the money that goes in from government and so on. But I just think, you know, everyone knew what Qatar was like. I spoke out against it going there initially, just like I did about China and the Olympics. But most people, you know, didn't. It was kind of, oh well, it's going to happen, it's not going to be nice. They were all more concerned that it was being held in the winter rather than that was the
big
issue.
I mean, because most people were more concerned about FIFA and the various issues around
as far as the whole question of the LGBT sort of there having armbands and things like that, I mean, FIFA's rules are very clear. You can't wear anything that's actually promoting something that's not sort of FIFA.
I mean, they find things
they knew that.
Copies, so
that, and I think what was ridiculous was that both, you know, Wales and England said their captains were going to do this.
Yeah.
And then they pull out of it.
Right.
Whereas the Iranian team, you know, stand there, don't sing the national anthem, which we were told they might not.
Right.
And they're really in danger. Whereas.
Yes.
So,
and they didn't get fined for that, did they?
No, they didn't, no.
Although that is actually overtly
more
political in a way,
isn't
it?
A fine, I suppose England wouldn't have minded in Scotland.
Oh, no, they wouldn't have.
It was the fact they might get a yellow card. But why did they, you know, why did they say this? It was almost as if it was a bit of, you know, good propaganda beforehand.
No, I said exactly that, that it's a virtue signalling of the first order.
But the whole thing is now, because everybody's there, people have paid their way to go out and watch, you know, and I don't blame the supporters who've done that. It's just this idea somehow that particularly the BBC feel that they're now they've got to every minute complete, you know, go back to, instead of saying this is about football now, they keep going back to the kind of side issues. And yes, whatever, what's happening in Qatar is probably, you know, it wouldn't be our values and the way we run things. But, you know, if we spent all our time criticising every country of things we didn't like, we wouldn't do anything.
Well, somebody
pointed
out to me yesterday, I think 8 of the teams playing at the World Cup do not allow homosexuality as a way of life in their country.
Yeah.
Most of them have made it illegal. Something like 28 Commonwealth countries, it's illegal. Mm-hmm. Nobody really mentions that. Qatar also hosted, I believe, the World Athletics Championship a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. Nobody said anything about that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's an awful lot of, shall we say, double standards going
on. So, I mean, I hope as it gets on, we get more into the actual football. And wasn't it great about... I mean, of course, we're probably Saudi Arabia beating Argentina.
Well, again.
But again, you see, there'll probably be some people not wanting to, because of Saudi Arabia.
Well, you can't cheer Saudi Arabia.
No, and yet that was an amazing result
for
them.
And I mean, some of the games actually so far have been tremendous. I mean, France yesterday was an exciting game. Today we've got Morocco, Croatia, Germany, Japan, Spain, Croatia, Belgium, Canada. And then you suddenly remember it's a world football tournament.
It's a world football.
Speaking of which, by the way, I mean, not that I would ever wish to give Piers Morgan any credit for anything, but he will take it anyway. Not only has he got Ronaldo out of his contract at Manchester United, he might have helped the fans out to such an extent that they find new owners.
Well, and you know, Piers Morgan is an Arsenal fan, so who knows? Maybe behind the scenes he's got Ronaldo.
Jeremy Kyle asked him last night, could he get him to Arsenal? And he might well do it, which would be an incredible thing.
I mean, Ronaldo, he's still, you know, yes, he's older and he can't run as fast and all of that sort of thing, but he still
sells an awful lot of shirts as well.
Brilliant, yes. Well, that's true. But I think it is quite an important decision if the Glaziers are really going to put Manchester United up for sale.
Yeah.
There was an offer earlier this year from, was it Jim Ratner? Jim?
Oh yeah, yes, I know the guy.
Yeah,
the guy that disappeared off to Singapore.
They didn't accept that.
Yeah.
They'll want a huge price, but you know, if you have the money, who wouldn't want to own Manchester
But, of course,
United?
It is a question with football teams. Be careful what you wish for, isn't it?
Well, it might because be a Qatari company.
You might end up with a Qatari company or you might end up with the Saudis. Like, I mean, that was the other great thing about the BBC.
Mm-hmm.
BBC and Alan Shearer, their new human rights specialist, banging on a Sunday night about human rights, whereby he didn't mention that his team, where I'm sure he makes still a fair amount of money by hospitality and appearing at various things, they're owned by the Saudis.
There's a whole whole hypocrisy about it. And it's particularly galling to see it on a channel that we're paying for, that we don't have any option to pay for, the BBC.
Yes. Well, we'll be talking about that in a minute, coming up later on as well. Let's finish up with the RMT and these strikes, because it's not just the RMT that is striking. We now seem to have a winter of discontent ahead of us. And as I said, coming into work today, the country's already on its knees. I mean, the last thing we need is a nurses' strike, a train strike, a civil service strike, you know, a barrister's strike, which has now been resolved. But there's all sorts of strikes being planned for the next sort of 2 or 3 months, and it's going to be horrendous.
Yes, and I think I'm particularly disappointed in the RMT because I used to work quite closely with the RMT because I had Waterloo in my constituency.
Yes.
And I got on, you know, very well with Bob Crowe, who was their general secretary and who was a great trade unionist.
Yes.
I'm very disappointed in the idea that they would ruin what would be the first normal, in inverted commas, Christmas, New Year by
Well, that
striking.
Week of the 13th and 14th and 16th and 17th is the big sort of party week because that's the last week people can actually go out and have a good
time. But then people want to travel and they usually travel just before Christmas or just before or after New Year.
Yeah.
And if the problem now with a rail strike, as we saw the last time, it's not just the day they're on strike, it's the whole few days around it.
Well, so that whole week is now done. And so this, the week of the 16th is useless. And the same week, the week, first week after New Year.
And I think they've said it so that they could put real pressure on the government to negotiate. And I understood there were talks happening, but seemingly they've gone nowhere. And I think, you know, the RMT, like every trade union, ultimately has to compromise in some way. They can't get what they want.
Right.
And people are getting more and more fed up. And you know, even people who genuinely support the right to strike, if it's used and abused, which really seems to be now that's going to happen, then I think they'll lose a lot of the support
they have
already.
I think they've lost the room because what they're doing is quite simply, you know, it's damaging children's ability to go to school. People want to take their kids to hospital, maybe, you know, going to work. It's just, you know, it's just horrendous.
But people, it's also going to put more and more pressure on people to try and, you know, try and get driverless trains.
Yeah. Well, bring it on. I think they're proving the point. You know, we've got driverless trains already in London. We've got them all over the world. Let's have them here and let's kick Mick the Grinch out, quite frankly. 0344 499 1000. Kate, thank you very much indeed. See you soon. Yeah. Hopefully before Christmas. Baroness Hoey of Larhill and Rathlin. We'll have more for you coming up. And we're going to be bringing you news from Manston. Kevin Saunders is going to join us because it turns out that the real surprise of winter of 2022 is that the BBC have discovered the migrant story. They actually did an entire show on it last night, as if we haven't been doing it for the last 3 years. Extraordinary. This is Talk TV. Welcome back to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk TV. This is, of course, the one place to be for the truth, the whole truth and nothing but the truth. And how about this? Gabby says this. Hi, Mike. Can you talk about the hundreds of people who lost their jobs at hotels that accommodate illegal immigrants and the homeless living destitute on the streets when illegal migrants crossing the channel are at hotels? It's a very good point. It's a very good question, because what we learned this week was that after the furore at Manston, the migrant centre down in Kent, which was supposedly terribly overcrowded with as many as 4,000 people living there, despite the fact that it was only really fit for about 1,500. It now turns out that they've all been cleared out, right? It started off at the end of last week, I think, where ministers said, oh, we've got it down to 300 now, so people are being well looked after. We've got doctors, we've got paramedics. Well, that's great. Very happy for you. But then when you ask the question, well, where have they all gone? Well, they've all gone into hotels. And as Gabby points out, well, an awful lot of those hotels used to employ an awful lot of people, all of whom have now been jumped onto the unemployment ladder. You've then got people being brought in by Serco to look after these people. Now, the thing that astonishes me is the BBC has suddenly discovered this story. I was listening to them both last night and this morning, and they're talking about it as if it's a new thing. And they're talking about families from Iraq who have been living in hotels for months and months and months on end. And apparently it's all the Home Office's fault. And they're all saying how stressed they are because it's really, really hard living in a hotel. Well, I'm sure it is. It's pretty hard living in a place that you can't afford to live in either, rather than getting something for free. It's also really, really hard to live on the street when you've served your country. So let's put some things into perspective here, shall we? Let's talk to Kevin Saunders, former Chief Immigration Officer at Border Force. Kevin, a very good morning to you.
Good morning, Mike.
You know, you and I have been talking about this for many years. We here at Talk TV and formerly Talk Radio have been highlighting the problem of channel migrants. But apparently nobody in government has taken it very seriously. Now suddenly everybody else has found out that there is a story there. I wonder if something will change.
Well, I think you're exaggerating a little bit. They have known about this for some time.
Yeah, but no, I'm not saying they haven't known about it. I'm saying they've done nothing about it because they haven't thought that they've thought, oh, the only people moaning about this are a bunch of right-wing bigots who have a radio station that doesn't really matter. Well, guess what? It does matter.
Well, you're quite right, Mike. It does matter. And it is getting more and more column entries in the press as well. It is a serious situation. However, Manston was only really designed to be a very fast processing centre.
Right.
Guess what? It was designed for Rwanda.
Yeah.
And we're still waiting for the courts to pronounce on whether Rwanda is on or not.
Yeah.
So once it is on, then Manston will come into its own, I think.
But the problem surely here, Kevin, is again the big elephant in the room. It's not whether or not Manston is fit for purpose. It's not whether or not we're sending people to Rwanda. The problem we've got is there are too many people coming in and the government and the country cannot cope with it. You know, as we see from Gabby's message, right, there's loads of hotels being currently commandeered. They've had to commandeer even more. We had a story last week where a guy was offered £1 million a year to shut down his hotel in Kent so that he could give it to illegal migrants coming over via the Home Office. Well, this is ridiculous. The whole system is broken and it needs to be fixed. Surely we have to stop people coming, don't we?
Oh, Mike, I couldn't agree with you more. We have to stop the people coming. The big problem is how do we do it? I mean, we're giving the French more money. They're putting more policemen on the beach. Mm. So hopefully that will kick in. Although at the moment, I understand that everybody in the Home Office is just praying for this awful weather to continue.
Yes.
Because that's stopping people coming across.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's right. And I mean, I take your point completely about the hotels. I'm due to go to Kent this afternoon.
Mm.
I've had great difficulty finding a hotel that isn't full of migrants.
Yeah, I bet. I mean, this is the problem. You know, people have lives that they used to use for, you know, having a good time. You know, people have told me all over the country, places like Wakefield, places like, you know, other parts of Yorkshire, people in Lancashire trying to find places they can have a party where they used to have, say, a retirement party or maybe even a wedding. We've had people whose weddings have been cancelled. You know, it's a massive issue, this. And 37,000 people are currently holed up in hotels for free. £7 million a day it's costing us. I mean, I find it astonishing that this is not a national emergency.
Well, I completely agree with you. It's north of £2 billion. Well, hang on a minute. £2 billion when we've got a crisis at the moment in the UK for UK people, let alone.
Well, this is it. I mean, and you know, listening to people like Shami Chakrabarty going on about how we must be compassionate and the Bishop of Dover telling us all how we must open our arms and allow all these people to come because they've had a terrible time. Well, that's all very well. But apart from the fact that half of them are being trafficked by illegal gangs and the illegal gangs are making money, we're encouraging them to do so. You know, this is a sort of, you know, bleeding heart liberal attitude and it's killing this country. I kid you not.
Well, you're right. And I would challenge these people who say that, well, let's welcome them. I don't think the Bishop of Dover would be particularly happy if...
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
She went back to her lodging and suddenly found half a dozen illegal migrants camped there saying, well, hang on a minute, you know, you're the fifth richest right. country in the world. Church of England is the biggest charity in the country. Let's stay in your place,
well,
Adam.
I mean, the Church of England could do worse than build on some of the land that they own, the hundreds of thousands of acres around the country, where they could house all these people. But until they're going to do that, I think they can shut up, frankly.
Well, I wouldn't put it quite like that.
No, I'm really angry about this, and so are an awful lot of people, Kevin. People are really angry about this because it's reached epic proportions. It's ruining the economy. It's ruining the hotel business. It's ruining parts of the country which were previously, you know, differently kind of managed because didn't have so many people living there. We've now got more people living in places where there is no infrastructure, frankly.
Well, it's putting a lot of pressure on local resources as well. I mean, I understand that it's virtually impossible to get a Year 7 place now at a school in Kent.
Yeah.
Because there are none because they've been taken over by migrants.
Right. I mean, when is somebody in the Home Office or somebody in the government going to put the people of Britain first? And by that, I mean the people who are already here, not necessarily people who are not immigrants. There are plenty of immigrants who have come legally, but they also deserve protection from this kind of mass invasion of people who think they can just come here and live off the land and get free money and free hotel accommodation. I'm sorry, but it's not on.
And don't forget, Mike, they also complain about the hotel accommodation.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I was listening again to a report this morning, some Iraqi family saying it was terribly stressful living in a hotel. And
there was some people living in a Holiday Inn in Essex who complained that it wasn't up to standard.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, I mean, Holiday Inn's not my favourite either, but I wouldn't complain about it if I was getting it for free.
Well, I mean, at the end of the day, Mike, a couple of weeks ago, they were living in a tent in Calais. Perhaps,
yeah, right.
Perhaps they would find that better.
Yeah, exactly right. It's absolutely extraordinary. But listen, Kevin, good to talk to you. Thanks very much indeed. Kevin Saunders there. He's going to try and get down to Kent. But good luck trying to get a hotel room in Kent because they are rammed. Not because it's the Garden of England. Not because the weather is particularly brilliant. No, not because of that. Because all the hotels are filled thanks to a block booking from the Home Office. Now, let's not forget, this is our money they're spending. This is our tax that they're using. And this is our policy that they are carrying out without ever asking anyone if that's what we wanted. They've allowed this situation to get completely out of hand, and I will take no instruction from any lefty who says, oh yeah, Mike Graham's just a racist. No, I care about this country. I care about the way this government is stripping it bare and giving it away to people who have no right to be here. It's all very well saying we should be compassionate. It's all very well to say we should issue the hand of friendship to anyone. Well, first of all, before you issue the hand of friendship to people, you'd like to know a bit about them. And we don't know anything about most of these people. So I think it's a very, very dangerous road to go down. I think it's the wrong road to go down. And I think the people of this country are quite rightly incensed and enraged by what the Home Office is doing. And they need to sort it out. And they need to sort it out now. Christmas is indeed coming. There will be veterans on the streets of this country, homeless veterans, who don't have a hotel for the night for free, who don't have cash in hand for free every day, who aren't given food for free every day, and they fought for their country. What on earth is going on? This is Talk TV. Welcome back to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham. This is, of course, Talk TV. And as ever, amazing how often this happens, and I'm not joking. We've done an hour of the programme. The show is underway. We've talked about a great many things. We've had a breaking news story in the first hour, as we often do, which is that the Supreme Court has told the SNP in no uncertain times you cannot have a separate and second referendum on Scottish independence without any reference to Westminster and without going through Parliament first in the UK. So I'm afraid you're going to have to go back, take your ball back to Scotland and come up with some other plan. But what's happened, right, is that the gloom and doom that was enveloping us has lifted. We now have a blue sky. We have fluffy white clouds. It may well be that the rain comes back, but things are looking up already. Kate Hoey was here earlier. She said people look forward to you cheering them up, Mike. Well, let me try and do that, because yes, there are bad things going on. Yes, I was angry in the first hour about the migrant crisis and the ridiculous amounts of money we're wasting on hotel stays for people who shouldn't even be here, right? William Clouston is here to talk to us in the second hour. He's a leader of the SDP, of course. He's got a view on Scotland and on the rail industry and on many, many other things as well. Let me read you this from Jenny in Glasgow. Why does Nicola Sturgeon talk like she represents Scotland, like Scotland is annoyed with the ruling? As a Scottish person, she doesn't represent me or the majority of people that I know. She's a pathetic, incompetent person who is an embarrassment to Scotland and is not speaking on my behalf. Well, thank you for that, Jenny, because I know personally plenty of people who live in Scotland and who don't live in Scotland as well, who do know members of their family who are still there, who do not want independence, who never wanted independence, and who will never want it. And so the SNP, let's not forget, does not speak for Scotland. William Clouston is here, a man who is of Scottish heritage, if that's the right phrase.
That's right.
As indeed am I, although Kevin O'Sullivan always has a go at me whenever I say it, and I'm waiting for his text to say, you're not Scottish!
No, you're Scottish.
Well, I am Scottish. I was born in London, but I was of Scottish parents. And so I would love to see the union continuing, so I'm very happy with this ruling today. It was always going to be the case. Nobody was ever going to overthrow the constitution, because I said this to Kate Hoey. When devolution was granted, it did not include the right for Scotland to basically just segregate itself off without any reference to anybody else.
That's right. I mean, it doesn't have the right unilaterally to do that. You'd expect the SNP to try and do what they've done. I accept that. But I'm relieved, Mike, today. I'm relieved of the ruling. I don't want to...
It's a good piece of news.
Yeah, I don't want the country split up. And, you know, I have five close family members that live in Strathclyde. We've got Orcadian links. And, you know, I'd be very upset if the union ended... I think the big thing, I mean, apart from the legal ruling, which is important, you know, you've got to respect that, but it's the political side that's important. You know, people have to get used to respecting votes. And Sturgeon, in her own little way, is a bit like Trump. You know, you have 2014, you have a referendum, and they don't respect it. And it's about time we started respecting the way people vote.
Yeah.
On their own literature, they put a generational decision. Well, a generation, well, that would be mid-2030s,
yeah,
something like that.
Exactly right. And, of course, their argument is, well, it changes now because we moved out of the European Union. Well, not really, because there was nothing written into that.
No.
There was nothing that said this is a referendum that takes place while these set of circumstances are applicable. Mm. In the same way that the now rejoiner types who are saying, well, it's very clear that Brexit isn't working, so let's just have another referendum. Well, yeah. No, that's not how it works. You're saying it doesn't work. Mm. You're saying that now is the time to have another referendum.
Yeah.
That's not the democratic process.
No, it's not, and it wasn't the question on the ballot paper. You know, and they've got, as I say, they've got to accept the result. The European issue is troubling for many people, but actually, I make a point that although most Scots voted to remain in the European Union, we wouldn't have left without Scottish votes. Remember that.
Well, let's remember also that more people voted to leave the European Union in Scotland than they did for independence.
Yes, yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Which is the other thing.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, this kind of plays into Nicola Sturgeon's hands, though, because she will say, look at them, they're all against us. And so privately, even though she might not be saying it publicly, privately she'll be telling people the English establishment is against us.
Well, yeah, doesn't bear any facts, does it? I mean, the English establishment, the English people are not against the Scottish people. And the British government... Actually, the settlement for Scotland is very, very generous.
Yeah.
If you look at health spending or transport spending or education spending per head, it's higher in Scotland than it is in England. I'm from the North East. A lot. If you read the Journal and the Northern Echo, if you read the letters pages in there, a lot of people in the North East say, you know, they want shot of Scotland. And they're upset because they don't get as much spent in the North East. It's an uncomfortable situation in some ways. I think the deal with the British government overall with Scotland is to pay them enough money so they don't leave. It's quite crude, really.
Yeah.
I mean, that, you know, we have to be honest about this, Mike. Citizens are not being treated on a par.
No.
The Scots have a very good deal.
But it's a curious system, isn't it? Because here we are paying Scotland to stay and then we're paying the European Union to leave.
Yes.
We sort of just keep paying people, basically.
Get it from both ends.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's our money.
Yeah.
So, I'm sorry. I didn't give them permission to do either of those things.
I would urge, yeah, I mean, English people that say, you know, get rid of Scotland doesn't matter. I think sometimes, I think, you know, particularly the Southern English taxpayer is a net contributor to Scotland. But you've got to ask what you get for that, Mike. I mean, it's a crude thing, this. It really is a crude thing. What do we get? What does the sort of English voter get for having Scotland bought into the Union? What we get is probably prevents Scotland going. if Scotland went and decided to do a military alliance with China or Russia, you could end up with a Russian base or Chinese base in Orkney. Mm. I'm sort of being a bit flippant, but that's what you prevent.
Here. That's well, I mean, what you maybe prevent. The question is not what do you prevent, it's what do you lose? Because I think perhaps what the government isn't very good at doing, and in Scotland the SNP won't do, is to talk about the attributes of Scotland, to talk about the way that Scotland is a part of a whole.
For sure.
Which makes us better. I believe Britain is better together.
Of course.
That sounds like a slogan, because it was.
Yeah.
But I do believe that it is. I think Britain without Scotland would be a less good place.
Diminished, yeah. Much, much diminished.
Yeah, totally.
Just the intellectual tradition's massive. Now, I'd be very, very upset if... I'm hoping, what I hope is, no one knows, but I'm hoping... that this is the sort of, you know, the high water mark of the SNP's activities. And you know, obviously, you've got this stuck situation because they control Holyrood.
Mm.
But I think at the next general election, it's quite likely that Labour will take some seats off the SNP. And again, I mean, Sturgeon said today that, you know, the fact that they won't have the referendum means that the next general election is a referendum. Well, I bet they probably wouldn't win that. Or certainly they'll lose seats. They'll be a net loser.
Yeah, I think the SNP sort of luster has gone.
Yeah.
I think Nicola Sturgeon's image has changed dramatically since COVID, because she was seen as a very draconian leader, certainly by a lot of moderate people that I know in Scotland, some of whom did vote for her, but who now will never vote for her again.
Yeah.
A bit like the Tories, you know.
Well, it also means that what it's meant for the Scottish citizen, for the Scottish taxpayer, is that they haven't been very well governed because this preoccupation, to refer all of our problems onto independence or being in the union is false. I mean, as I say, health spending is comparatively generous compared to England and Scotland and so on. I think that a lot of Scots see it as a distraction. Mm. And actually, it probably deters an investment as well.
But let's talk about distractions, because we have Prime Minister's questions today.
Mm.
I don't know yet what the sort of the main thrust of Keir Starmer's attack line will be.
Mm.
But we are in a kind of terrible limbo, it seems to me, where nothing's really happening. It feels like we're sort of walking through treacle or spinning wheels in the sand. Rishi Sunak and Jeremy Hunt are trying to convince us that, you know, we must have some pain in order to escape from these terrible clutches of economic demise.
Mm.
I mean, I don't think they know what they're doing.
No, they don't. We're at the end of it now. They've had 12 years, haven't really taken anything seriously.
No.
It's been a disastrous record overall. Economically poor, haven't dealt with any of the fundamental problems. You know, as I've said,
many problems have got worse.
Many problems have got worse, and actually, the autumn statement, the budget statement, really was. I'd argue that the causes of all this stuff go way, way back, and what he's dealing with are the symptoms. He's sort of firefighting, but until we learn to produce a bit more, until we learn to reindustrialize, make a bit more here, make and buy and sell more here in the UK, deal with the trade deficit, you'll just accumulate debt, and then they're firefighting and they wonder why public spending is so high.
Yeah.
Public spending is so high because we're dealing with economic failure. They haven't got a plan.
Mm.
Even the basics, as I say, I mean, you said that your first hour was, you know, a little bit upsetting for some people, but look, the way to get even and get happy is via the ballot box.
Yeah.
And I would urge everyone, just think about it. Think, have you been well governed? Also think, would Keir Starmer be any better? I don't think he would.
No. Therefore, there is no salvation at the ballot box then, is there? Because you're stuck with this two-party system whereby if you either vote for what's been here for 12 years, which has had various incarnations of not very much success, and terrible dereliction of duty, to be honest.
Mm.
Then you've got Keir Starmer and his kind of, you know, ludicrous mantra of nothingness.
Mm.
You know, if you were to have a description or an embodiment of a pyramid of piffle, it's Keir Starmer, surely, right?
Yeah. No, it's right. But last time I was on, Mike, you know, that afternoon, you know, a few weeks ago, we announced this electoral pact with Reform UK, and we're very excited about it. It's a limited pact, but it's a no-stand pact.
Mm-hmm.
In our key target seats in the next general election, Reform won't be standing in them, and we won't be standing in theirs.
Mm.
And we've got a special deal in South Yorkshire.
And have you identified sort of individual seats that you could be successful in?
Well, we're a small party. Our success is thousands of votes for us.
Yeah.
I honestly, Mike, if I came on here and said we're going to win loads of seats, people would think, you know, nurse, carry this man away.
Right.
Be realistic. You know, Reform are a bigger party.
I'm saying is if you've got a pact with Reform, you must have some hope that it will
be
successful in some places. You'll get a seat.
We in South Yorkshire, I think we'll do very, very well. We'll see. Wait and see. The electoral dynamics there suit us absolutely perfect. The sort of faith, flag and family, patriotic left, old, you know, a little bit old-fashioned, considered by some, goes down very well there, and we've got this deal with them, and I think we'll do very well there. I don't know, it's difficult to predict, but I would just urge people to stop voting for these awful duopoly zombie parties. That's the way to deal with this, build something better.
Okay, let's talk about the rail strikes. You think that there should be and will be a settlement?
I want there to be a settlement, Mike. I've argued, I mean, I've argued pretty much from the start that what the RMT were actually asking for, which is 7%, is entirely reasonable when inflation is at 11%, basically. You know, they're actually arguing for a pay cut. They're not asking for very much. And, you know, we've given them support in that. Most of their members haven't had a pay rise in 3 years. I think... I mean, funnily enough, the structure of how we deal with our railways in this country is not helping this. Because
the railways are knackered in this country. I mean, when they are on strike, sometimes actually the service is more reliable than when they're not.
Yeah.
I mean, there was a piece in The Sun yesterday by one of the editors of Fabulous magazine who said, "I'm now actively being prevented from seeing members of my family because the train services are so useless. You can't book a train without knowing that it's going to be cancelled. You can't be sure that you can take a holiday using trains because they might not be working."
You lose reliability. You lose patronage straight away if that's the case.
Yeah.
And even, you know, say to our major cities, London, the capital, to Manchester, Andy Burnham has been right in speaking up against the atrocious service offered. But I'll just get back to this point about the structure, because the RMT and the other unions are negotiating with 14 different entities and the rail authority hovering around. And then you've got the transport secretary every time they're trying to get close to a deal, say, actually, no, I don't think we can do it. Frankly, it would be easier. We propose that railways should be brought into public ownership again. Mm. A proper integrated system from Caithness to Cornwall.
Yeah.
Make it something that we can be proud of, invest in it, and get people back on the railways. But
hang on, you say invest in it. We've got HS2. That's an investment in the railways, isn't it?
Well, that's a terrible malinvestment. I mean, it's about the
I
worst.
I said that with some slight irony.
No, it's shocking. I mean, you know, yet again, this government has contrived to you know, I'm for good capital expenditure, nuclear power, you know, sensible things, but instead this government's put money into about the worst project.
Well, this is it. You know, neglect the railways in general, build one line which helps some people, but hasn't got ready and won't be ready probably till the day I die.
But the total subsidy to the franchisees, the total cost to the government of running railways is higher now than it was under nationalisation.
Yeah.
That's so I'm I'll fly this flag now. I'm hoping that the RMT's suggestion of major strikes pre-Christmas and after, I'm hoping that's up the ante and we get the 7% agreed and we can get on with our lives.
Well, I wish Mick Grinch would make up his mind because he's ruining Christmas for everybody, including lots of children. So congratulations, Mick. Communism must be paying you very well. This is Talk TV. Thank you. Welcome back to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham, right here on Talk TV. The World Cup is upon us, ladies and gentlemen, as if you didn't know. We've already had the controversy with England. They kind of put that all to bed with their armbands, of course, when it came down to it. They didn't want to wear them, but they did do rather well against Iran, and they ended up winning by, of course, 6-2. They've got their next game coming up, of course, against the United States. They're then going to play Wales. Today we've got Morocco, Croatia, Germany, Japan, Spain, Costa Rica, Belgium, Canada, all being covered, of course, by the BBC and ITV. Gary Lineker making a fool of himself on the opening night of the World Cup, because before the Qatar game against Ecuador, he made it very clear that more important than football to him was the fact that Qatar was a ghastly state involved in an awful lot of human rights abuses. He didn't mention David Beckham, funnily enough. He just had a go at a few other people who were involved in it. Yesterday, though, there was a France-Australia game. Now, France slaughtered Australia, which is bad news if you're Australia, great news if you're France. I've actually got France, I think, as one of my teams to win it. And they looked pretty good. However, at half-time, there had been a couple of very, very big sporting football stories that had broken. One, that Cristiano Ronaldo, after giving an exclusive interview, a world-exclusive interview to Piers Morgan, had now parted company with Manchester United, one of the biggest football teams in the world, right? It then transpired, about an hour later, just in time for the half-time conversation, that the Glazers, the owners of Manchester United, might be willing to sell the club. So you might have thought that if you were presenting Match of the Day, which is ostensibly a football show, presented from Qatar by Gary Lineker, that they would have talked about Cristiano Ronaldo, who happens to be in Qatar playing as captain of the Portuguese team, and Manchester United, one of the biggest teams in the world, possibly being sold. But they didn't. Do you know why? because they'd already had a specific programme of events. What they wanted to do instead was show a film about a climate scientist and an environmental campaigner talking about carbon neutrality. Because suddenly somebody at the BBC has woken up. Somebody told them that the Qatar World Cup was going to be carbon neutral. And then that turned out to be cobblers. So they fell for it. Let's talk to Kevin O'Sullivan and find out what on earth is happening at the BBC. Kevin, very good morning to you.
Hello, Mike.
What the hell is wrong with them?
BBC, isn't it? Classic BBC. Hey? I mean, they just cannot control themselves. They've got to lecture to us. They've got to sermonise to us. I mean, they kicked off their coverage of the World Cup with every single presenter, Gary Lineker, Alex Scott, and all the rest of them, just sermonising to us, telling us how they're caught in a moral dilemma. The football's important, but you know, Qatar's a terrible country and we're going to wear the armband. Oh, look, here's Alex Scott wearing the armband. Oh, well, now we've had enough of homophobia. Let's move on to climate change.
Yes.
Let's lecture the audience about climate change. If anyone at the BBC in power is listening right now, this isn't why we pay the BBC licence fee. We don't give you money to lecture to us. Make some programmes we want to watch. And when you're covering the football, just cover the football and shut up about everything else.
Yes, exactly right. Because, in fact, people who are on social media saying to those of us who are critical of them, saying we don't have to watch it. Well, no, we don't have to watch it, but we do have to pay for it, even if we don't want to watch it. And that is the problem with the BBC. They don't understand the fact that, you know, they do not represent the people of this country. They work for the people of this country. I don't yet know. I've asked the question. I don't yet know how many BBC employees are out there in Qatar or what the cost of it will be. But I imagine it's pretty damn high. And for Gary Lineker to fly out there in what is likely to be the biggest and most expensive in terms of carbon footprint World Cup of all time, you know, how dare he try and make out that they give a damn?
Yeah, well, I mean, why have they got to do this? I mean, never. The BBC is getting worse and worse and worse on this level, insofar as it has always been a kind of a closed bubble, an insular bubble of people from North London who work in the West End at the BBC HQ, and they're all guilty of total groupthink. You know, they were massive Remainers.
Yeah.
Now they're massive climate change obsessives. Have you seen the BBC climate editor, Justin Rowlett?
Oh, I mean,
the man is a maniac.
He keeps getting stuff wrong, maniac. Massively wrong, doesn't he? I saw him actually
He's not a journalist. He's a polemicist.
Yeah.
He lectures us all about, you've got to care about climate change. No, do your job. Report on it. Don't tell us what we've got to think. That's the whole point about the BBC. Mm. It has gone from a once laudable organisation that understood its audience, that made programmes to entertain its audience, to an organisation that doesn't really make very entertaining programmes anymore. It just wants to lecture to the rest of Britain from their ivory tower in Northwest 3 London about what we should all be thinking. And frankly, they can all do one. And that is exactly why the BBC licence fee is on a life support machine and will soon die.
And this is also why every single output of BBC's is currently down. You know, their radio figures for the last quarter on Radar were massively down. Millions and millions and millions of people are switching off, joining places like Talk TV, because they're sick to death of the narrative. Sick to death of these people, as you say, lecturing to them. You know, you watch this show and you watch any other show, your show here, we don't lecture people about things. We inform them about things. We don't make them feel guilty for thinking one thing and not doing another. But I find it extraordinary that these very, very well-off individuals, you know, the moral dilemma that you described that they went through on Sunday night amounted to this. Well, I gave a lot of thought to whether I should come or not. And then I thought, blimey, that's a lot of money. I'll just go. You know, that's not really a moral dilemma, that, is it?
Yeah, that's exactly right. They've got to lecture us about how torn they were about, in effect, endorsing the Qatari World Cup. But in the end, they had a look at their paychecks and decided that they would go either. So, in other words, they're all for sale. I mean, Alex Scott, oh, look, I'm bravely wearing the One Love armband after all.
Yeah.
Look at me, look at
me. So brave.
Recently, she was photographed having the time of her life in Dubai, yeah, where homosexuality is not a big thing either.
Yeah.
She wasn't wearing an armband
Funnily
then.
Enough.
You know why, Mike? Because there were no cameras on her.
Yeah.
The hypocrisy is palpable.
It really is. Absolutely extraordinary. And I suppose we've got more of it to come because, I mean, the football actually has been pretty good. That game yesterday between Saudi Arabia and Argentina was amazing. But, of course, we've now got the virtue signalers going, whoa, wasn't that an amazing game? Oh, hang on. Saudi Arabia, oh, we can't cheer for them because they're horrible people. They're a horrible government. They execute people. You know, it's ridiculous, isn't it?
It really is. I mean, they really should have ring-fenced the World Cup and made it the coverage of it purely about football. By the way, I do think that Harry Kane, England and all the other teams made a mistake in not standing up to FIFA. It's none of FIFA's business whether or not teams choose to wear the One Love armband. And I think that the team should have done it and said to FIFA, do your worst. However, I don't blame Harry. I don't even really blame England that much. There was a decision made multilaterally across all the teams to go along with FIFA's instruction not to wear the armband. So I think they made a mistake. But that said, what the hell is Alex Scott? What does she think she's doing saying, yeah, I'm still wearing one? Why are they sermonizing to us? Why are they doing this? Why are they cutting away from the World Cup to say, oh, there's still climate change to worry about? It is absolutely pathetic, and they are so out of touch with the way the majority of people in this country feel. And if you do not, you know this, Mike, as a broadcaster, if you do not understand your audience, you are finished. And what we are looking at here, trust me, is the last days of the BBC Raj.
Yeah, absolutely right. Now, look, speaking of high towers and whited sepulchres at NW3. Your mate Boy George was kicked out of the jungle last night, so he'll be back in Hampstead any day now.
No, it's amazing. Yeah, he lives just around the corner from me. There's me going on about NW3, where I live. But trust me, I'm an outsider. I'm an outrunner here. But anyway, Boy George, the fourth celebrity to be kicked out of the jungle, and not Matt Hancock. So they all sat around going, oh, Matt Hancock, he killed so many people. He's an evil Tory. Oh, I don't know what he's doing here. So then we get the first one out is Charlene White, the serious journalist who reads the auto cue. Then we get Scarlett Douglas. So that's two women of colour. They all cry, racist! That's why they've been kicked out. Then it's white woman, Sue Cleaver, sexist! Now, no doubt, we're going to get homophobic.
It'll be homophobic today, yeah, because Boy George has kicked out. But, you know, Matt Hancock's going to win this, isn't he?
The fact of the matter is all four of these people who have been kicked out so far are less popular than the former health secretary, Matt Hancock. They can call him an evil Tory as much as they like, but the audience are loving Matt, and he's got a fair chance of winning. I think he'll definitely make the top three.
Amazing. Kevin, thank you very much indeed. That's some epitaph, isn't it? Less popular than Matt Hancock. My God. This is Talk TV.
Talk radio. Across the UK. Online. On DAB. And on your smart speaker. The Independent Republic of Mike Graham. On Talk Radio.
If you enjoyed that, be sure to catch the whole show 10 to 1, Monday to Friday on Talk Radio via DAB online or via the Talk Radio app. And if you have an opinion on the stories we cover, we'd love to hear from you. Call us on 0344 499 1000 or tweet at Talk Radio during the show to have your say.
Mid-morning with Mike Graham. Talk Radio.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.